You're on Lamed Hey and Aleph. So we're on the coattails of the Mishnah on Lamed Aleph is about Esrog. So the Gemara begins Tanu Rabbanan. So this is a statement. Sometimes the Gemara will start off with a question. In this particular case, the Gemara introduces a statement. We don't really know where the Gemara is headed yet, which is interesting. You always got to pay attention what the structure of the Gemara is. This particular Gemara just starts off with a statement. What's the statement? Pre-Eitz Hadar. That's a quote from the Pasuk. The Esrog is referred to as the fruit of a tree that is beautiful. Is beautiful talking about the tree? Is beautiful talking about the fruit? You might even have to say it's the fruit of a tree. Do fruits grow anywhere else? Well, I guess there's a pre Adama. So, the Hadar part? Because you're not eating the tree, and it's not taking the tree.
You're saying, what has to be beautiful?
Yes, that, so what does it mean? It refers to the fruit, right?
Yeah.
So the Gemara says, Eitz, shetam eitzo, upir yoshaveh. What? A tree that the flavor of its bark and its fruit are the same. Where is the brisa coming from? What? Why? Because it says pre eitz hadar, then all of a sudden it means that the tree tastes like the fruit? Where is that coming from? What? Well, before we get to what it is, which apparently is supposed to mean esrog, I guess, but where is the gemara coming from? Like, why?
Because it says pre eitz hadar.
Yeah.
I guess it's like, it's one thing.
So where do you see that the...
If it said pre hadar on the eitz or pre...
Yeah.
It just could have worded it differently.
But why would it mean that the fruit tastes like the bark?
I don't believe it, so I don't know.
So where is this coming from? Does anybody have a thought? So it seems to come from the idea that it's pre-Eitz. Because... although one could argue that a pre comes from the Adama, from the ground, it's a pre eitz. What do you mean? You mean it's the eitz? The eitz is the pre? Or this is the fruit of a tree? Of course, the fruit of a tree. Well, it could be the fruit of the ground. So that's a little, that's the one nuance that, like, we're wondering about. Okay, it's true. But why do you have to say pre eitz? Is it because the eitz actually does have a flavor like a pre? And that seems to be the angle that the Bryce is coming from. It's the pre-Eitz. The Eitz has, it's almost like the Eitz is the pre. So what's the word Eitz doing there? So the Gemara says, Hevi Omer Zeh Esrog. So that's an Esrog, because Esrog doesn't really taste so great. You got to add a lot of sugar and a lot of other things. And most of the Esrog, by the way, is the peel anyhow.
People eat them?
Yeah,
but
not much. They make like jelly and jam out of it a little while, you know, after. What? Right. Well, I'm trying to figure out why the Gemara thinks that an esrog tastes like wood.
Maybe it's not talking about the taste. Like, for example, hickory wood.
Yeah.
It gives off the taste when you cook with it. So maybe when you cook with the wood, right? So you're burning the wood of this eighth of an esrog.
The fragrance when you burn it?
Right, so when you're cooking with wood, you're not getting the taste of the wood, you're getting the taste of the fragrance and the meat feels. Right?
So you think it means when you cook it? That's what you mean?
When you burn the wood,
yeah,
and you cook something,
yeah,
using that wood, right? Certain woods give certain flavors, yeah, 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 to foods.
Right.
So it's saying that when we use the wood from the oak tree,
yeah,
it'll give off the same flavor or scent.
I don't know, it's like...
Okay, that's interesting, Chaz. Huda wants to suggest that maybe the idea is that the wood or the bark of an esrog tree gives off a certain fragrance, which is similar to the pre itself. Okay, I don't know. It's a thought.
We might also be talking about something inside of the tree. Like the esrog, the outside is hard and
Because of the peel, because it's such a thick peel. Is that what you mean?
Maybe.
Maybe. Anyway, so different. Yeah. So that's also another question. As a general question, what do you guys think about this? Is the Gemara not sure if we've got it right? Anyone wants to know what it is?
What is the
age, or what is the fruit? There's pre-age. Is the Gemara trying to figure out what it is? What is going on in the Gemara?
Maybe they're trying to figure out what fruit
has to taste like that.
Why? Because we don't know which one it is?
I guess.
You see, David, this is the first thing you got to ask when you learn a Gemara like this. First thing you have to say to yourself is, totafos. What if translate tongue? Yeah. What? Yes? Moses, what are totafos? You know, he's like, I don't know. Yeah. Because it's not a word. So Terry says, Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, he says, Klal Yisrael, which, by the way, this has been happening a long time before the Gemara came around, right? They've been celebrating this holiday for quite some time. And Terry says, Priya Tadar. So somebody must have asked what it is. So what is the Gemara doing? What's the point of this Gemara? Is that what it was? That Hashem says when we all tried to figure it out?
I might be trying to figure out what food it is.
Did that happen? Did everyone sit around after Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai and it was time to celebrate Sukkot? And they said, oh, well, Moshe says in your Torah, Priyei Tadar. You guys want to take a vote? And everyone like split up and they came back with all these different fruits. You guys think this one's it? That's pretty. Nah, I like a fruit that has more of a shape like that. You know, that's pretty to me. No. I like my women. Never mind. So what exactly is going on? Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. What? What's the answer to the question? The answer is Moshe Rabbeinu told him which one it was. He told him it's an Ezra. So what's going on over here? Yes, the answer is we're trying to see it in the Torah Shabbosav. Do you remember I told you Zerah Chaim HaKadosh? Zerah Chaim HaKadosh asked this question. Moshe Rabbeinu is Olam Morim. The Inyan of the Yuma, the parshas that we've been reading. Moshe Rabbeinu is on Har Sinai. And he's being shown Kol HaTarikula, he's being shown the future, and he's shown the base matters of who? Remember? Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva is explaining the crowns on the letters. Yosef Makil is not here right now, but not the Lamed. He wanted to know how come the Lamed sometimes is printed like this, and how come the Lamed sometimes is printed like this? Right? The answer is because sometimes there's a letter above it that the Lamed would stick into, so they have to bend it. Right? That's the answer. But Rabbi Akiva was darshaning the crowns of the letters. So Moshe Rabbeinu was like, this guy's awesome. He should be giving the Torah, not me. Until finally he hears one of the Talmidim say, but Rabbi, how do you know that? And Rabbi Akiva says, well, that's halacha l'Moshe Misinai. And then Moshe Rabbeinu felt better. And Chaim Kodesh wants to know, what in the world's going on over here? First of all, how could Rabbi Akiva know something Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know? Moshe Rabbeinu learned Kol HaTorah Kula, he was the source of all of this. Rabbi Akiva discovered something Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know. And why would Moshe Rabbeinu feel better? Because it's halacha l'Moshe Misinai. Like, what does that change? So he says, of course Moshe Rabbeinu knew Kol HaTorah Kula. The chiddush of Rabbi Akiva was only, how do you see that halacha in the Torah Shebichsav? How do you see it in the Torah Shebichsav? So that's the agenda. A lot of Gemaras are just trying to do that. Where is it hinted to? Where do you see there's some sort of remez or it's encoded or a hint or something to this halacha in the Torah Shebichsav? So that's what the Gemara is doing. Gemara knows it's an answering! And the question is, how do you see it hinted to? Where is it encoded over here that this is the Esrik? And that's a machloikas in this Gemara, but there's no nafkamina, because at the end of the day, everybody knows what the Esrik is. It's just a question of how do you see it in the Torah. So that's one suggestion, is that it's the pre-eight hadar, that it's referring to a pre-eight. The eight is the pre, so it tastes very much like the wood. And so we can ponder, what exactly does this Tana have in mind? How exactly does the fruit taste like it? But that's the idea. So the Gemara has an interesting question, which again, is not a real question. It's a question on the attempt to show where it's hinted to. What do I mean? Because the question of the Gemara, ve'ema what? Let's say that it refers to, who remembers? Pilpilin. So what are pilpilin? It doesn't mean peppers like our peppers, like green peppers, red peppers. It means like peppercorns, you know, those little tiny things, those little ball guys. So maybe it's that, because after all, they're pretty woody, aren't they? I mean, they're those little peppercorns. You got to grind them up in order to use that.
Yeah, but then again, it's the flavor you get from pepper.
But it's wood. It's like eating wood that has a lot of flavor.
No, there's wood that's flavored. There's wood that's like when you smoke it.
Yeah. Like that's a fragrance. Flavor. When you burn the wood, when you smoke it, there's a fragrance. Here, there's a real flavor. Okay. But here, you can definitely hear how pilpilin, peppercorns, would definitely have a certain, it's like eating wood. Oh. So let's see. So he says, maybe it's peppercorns. Get a sound from the Bryce. I Rabbi Meir Omer. Meir is to say, the pasuk says that when you plant, come to Eretz Yisrael and you plant any tree, the rest of the pasuk goes on to say, and you're not allowed to eat from it. You know, 3 years and whatnot. What all the details? So obviously, we're talking about fruit trees. Any idea, Shoeitz Michael? Obviously, I know that it's a fruit, it's a tree that you can eat from it. So why would you have to spell out and you plant a tree that you eat from? You're not allowed to eat from it. That's obviously, from the predicate, from the halacha that you're not allowed to eat from it for 3 years, you'll know you're talking about a tree that produces something you can eat. So you don't need to spell out that the tree is an Eitz Ma'achol. That you don't need to spell out. So why does the Torah spell out and you plant an Eitz Ma'achol? Matam ad loimar Eitz Ma'achol. Because the eitz is for eating. It doesn't mean that it produces a fruit that's for eating. That's obvious. That's what the whole pasuk is speaking about. But the chiddush over here is eitz machal means that the tree itself lends itself to eating. So what is that? Have you ever heard of pilpilin? That refers to the peppercorns. Which teaches you. That pilpilin, these peppercorns, also have a halacha of orla. Okay, so what just happened in the Gemara? The Gemara is saying, I know for sure that if you want to talk about a fruit that tastes like the tree, it's peppercorns. You know how I know? From Orla. Because the pasuk says by Orla that when you plant a tree that you eat, you're not allowed to eat from it for 3 years. Well, that's repetitive. Why do you have to say a tree that you eat? The answer is because it's not talking about the fruit. It's coming to include even a tree that you eat. What kind of tree do you eat? The wood? The answer is, that's what the Gemara says. These are peppercorns. So what's the chiddush? Because peppercorns aren't really like a fruit. So then, why should they have anything to do with orla? Okay, so that's the chiddush of the Torah, that they're considered to be a fruit, even though it's kind of like eating the tree itself. So what do you see from here? The only reason the Gemara quotes this is because it wants to show you that peppercorns are a case where the fruit, so to speak, tastes like the tree. That's exactly what we're learning out from this brisa. And it also teaches you that Eretz Yisrael chaseira klum, that Eretz Yisrael lacks nothing. Shenemar l'sechza kolba. It is interesting, no? You can ski in Eretz Yisrael and also, you know, be in the desert, like at the same time. You can go from Har Hermon all the way down to, you know, Sinai Desert in the same day. He's got everything, Eretz Yisrael, everything at the same time. L'sechza kolba. Hasa mishum d'lo yashar. Now, you're right. You're right that when you speak about a fruit that tastes like the tree, peppercorns are probably the paradigm. But in our case, we're talking about Priya Tadar, it's not possible what to be the peppercorn. Why is it not possible? The lay sure. It's not possible to be peppercorn. Why? Hechin Avid, how should we do it? What do you mean, how should we do it? How should we fulfill the mitzvah then, according to this, if you're going to say you have to take a peppercorn? Ninkoit Chado, going to take one? Can you imagine taking one peppercorn? So you'll say, okay, I mean, it sounds funny, but if we would all be taking one peppercorn in our hand and holding it next to our hadassah or our halua, we wouldn't, you know, really, it wouldn't bother us. So what's the Gemara's problem?
It would be pathetic.
Okay. Lo min kara l'kichasa. What does that mean? Lo min kara l'kichasa. It's not recognizable, it's taking. What does that mean? So this is interesting, right? David, I'm saying it's interesting for you. Right? Why is it interesting? Because there are times when the Torah says you have to take something or give something. And whenever the Torah says you have to take or give something, the Torah also means it has to be something of significance, has to be something where the taking of it or the giving is some to some degree recognizable. Which is an interesting idea, but it's built into this Chazal, it's built into a lot of those places where it comes up, is that you have to be able to see something, has to be something there. But a peppercorn, you're not even going to notice it, in which case, that's not part of Lekicha. Now, I'm saying that to explain the Gemara. Because Gemara itself doesn't really explain what it's talking about. The Gemara just says, it's lakicha, it's taking, it's not recognizable. And Albert's like, so what? You know, like, so be it, you know? You can smell it afterwards, probably in your hand. Like, what do you mean it's not recognizable? So I'm explaining it, that the Gemara means to say that any time there's a taking of something, built into that is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to take something. So it has to be something recognizable that you're taking. It can't be something that just fits into the palm of your hand that you nor anybody else really notices. Okay, says the Gemara, Ninkai Chaya Tlasa. So, okay, we'll solve the problem. Maybe you have to take two or three of them. So the answer is, there's a little bit of a gears issue, but pre Echad Amarachmana, this is pre a Tadar, which means one fruit, not multiples. So therefore, Vilei Shnayim, Vishlei Shaperis, and you can't take two or three, so it has to be one. So since it has to be one, and one peppercorn would be defined as a fruit, then that's not called a Lakicha, that's recognizable, and that's just not it. Therefore, it's not possible to take a peppercorn instead of an esrog. But all of this is just to get at the remez. At the end of the day, everybody knows it's an esrog. It's just a question of, well, do you see it in the term pre-et hadar? It refers to specifically something where the fruit tastes like the tree. Nah, not convincing. Not a good remez. Not a good hint. Rabbi says, "Al tikre hadar ela hadir." This is a very unusual drasha as well. Don't read it as beautiful fruit, but rather as fruit that's like a deer. Anybody know what a deer is? In Hebrew. Yeah, it's a pen of sheep or those types of animals. Correct. What is that supposed to mean? Pre-et hadir? It's a fruit of a tree that's like sheep? It's like a sheep pen? What? Weird stuff? My dear Zad, just like a pen of sheep. You guys ever been to a petting zoo, you know? Just like that. I was at a petting zoo recently in Muncie. Down the block from me is this baseball stadium. Don't worry, the guy's in jail now for building it. But they built the baseball stadium before he went to jail. That's right. It used to be the Boulder Stadium, whatever they call it now. That always, some bank always pays for it, you know? And the Prudential, this, that, whatever. Anyway, so they had a big, I think it was Sukkot. They had one of these petting zoos, and you know, I don't know, go shoot this, that thing, you know, these carnival types of things. And they had a petting zoo. So this was the mutant petting zoo. I have a video of the three-horned creature that was there, and I have a video of its three horns. I have never seen this before. It was one of these, like, I don't know, like, that thing got three shifers, you know? Dude, they got a shwarm over here. This is the strangest thing. In any case, my dear Zad, just like this petting zoo, yesh by gedolim, hiktanim, there's some bigger ones, there's some little ones, tamimim, there's some with, you know, normal, no blemishes, two horns, ubalei mumen, and then you got Mr. Shwarm over here with his three horns, you got all these messed up, blemished animals, hachanami. Here too, when it comes to the species of fruit that's the pre-ates hadir, it's a fruit that's like a petting zoo. Yeah, you should make a tell them to be a woman. You have all of the above, big ones, little ones, perfect ones, messed up ones. Gemara says, I don't know the last time you were in an apple orchard or any other type of orchard. Atu shar peiris leis begedol mekatanim timbali mumin. Comes all of the other fruits. There are not in them big ones and little ones and perfect ones and messed up ones. How many other fruits like that? What are you talking about? Why is that a good remez to esrog? Elachikomer. Rather, this is what he meant to say. Ad she bo'in kitanim. Until come the small ones, meaning until the new ones have begun to blossom. Adayin gedolim kayamim. The bigger ones are still there. In other words, you're right. When it comes to most orchards, So you're going to have bigger ones and smaller ones, nicer ones and less nice ones. But it's all one crop. But here we're talking about different crops, where there's a new crop that comes in when the older crop is still there. So there are going to be older ones and newer ones and all these different kinds of two different seasons of these things. And where do you have that? Only by the esrig, because they stay on the tree for a really, really, really long time. Rivoa maraltikri hadar ella. What's this? Hadar. So those of you that speak in, you know, Sfaradit, you're sorry. I'm sorry, but you won't really understand the Gemara. It's two komatzes versus patach komatz. So if you have two komatz, so it's hadar. But if you have a patach followed by a komatz, it's hadar. Hadal.
Hadal.
Hadal. Hadal. Hadal. Hadal. Hadal. Hadal. Hadal. Hadal. Hadal. You can't tell the difference. You want to say it's all in the accent.
No, it's the pronunciation. The denunciation, it's where it's on. One's
the accent.
Yeah,
the dark.
No, it's not that accent.
It's not?
We're talking about letter.
You what?
No, the difference is on the letter.
What about the letter?
You're strengthening your point.
The emphasis.
Yeah, you emphasize the letter.
So it's Mil'el or Mil'ra? Never mind. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara says the way that it's supposed to be written is with a double komatz. So it's Hadar. So that means beautiful. Hadar means what? Dira. The one that lives. Yeah, Hadar, the one that lives. Hey, how you do? The one. Dar, that lives. So Rivo says, don't read it as hadar, ela hadar. Davar shedar b'ilana mishana l'shana. We're talking about specifically the fruit that is on a tree, hadar, that lives on the tree. What do you mean, lives? All fruit lives on trees? No, but it means it lives on the tree continuously from one season to the next. It's there longer than other fruits. Essentially, it's exactly the same drush as we just had. It's just that, what is the remez? Is it the remez in that it's like a petting zoo? Hadir? Or is the remez that it's like a fruit that lives there for longer than is typical? But it's the same. Again, no one's arguing here. There's no machalokes. Everyone knows it's esrig. It's just a question of what's the best remez to the fact that it refers to an esrig. Ben azay oimer, al tikre hadar, ella, again, it's a girsa issue in the Gemara, but hadur. What's hadur? Shekein b'lashon yavani, korein lamayim, hadur. Oh, it's a Greek hint. I don't know what to tell you. Sometimes this happens. You know what Rabbi Kiva said about Totafos, right? Rabbi Kiva said about Totafos. I'll go back 1 second. Totafos, Rabbi Kiva said, yeah, because tat, katfe or something like that means two, and pat bafrike means something. He said it was like other languages that somehow snuck their way into the Torah, and it means tutu.
Oh, isn't that two and two?
Yes, it's tutu. Two and two. Two in one language, two in another language. It's four altogether. Why is the Torah quoting from katfe, afriki? What in the world's going on over here? Okay, I don't know what to tell you, but that was Rabbi Kiva's remez, where he saw that was a remez to this idea. So here again, Torah is saying, yeah, because hadur refers to water in Greek. Anyone here know Greek? Well, then that's what it means. So, shekem aleshi yivani korin lamayim, hadur, because that's apparently in Greek. That's hadur, or means water. What does it do with anything? Right? So it's a pre-ate hadur. It's a fruit of a tree that grows on water? It grows on water. No trees grow on water. They all grow in the ground. What does that mean? What is a fruit or a tree that grows on all water? Have you ever said esrig? That refers to the esrig. Why does the esrig grow on all water as opposed to anything else? So where's Rashi over here? Sure. Rashi says nothing. So there are those that say that it means that it grows on water that can be irrigated. It can, an esrog tree can even grow in a potted plant. It doesn't have to grow connected to the ground. I don't know how many of you ever tried to grow esrogim. It's really hard. My brother actually has a few sprouts now, finally. They're really challenging. I have a vort based on this. So the Gemara, well, Because we're out of two da'as, let me just say my word. What does the esrog represent? There are different midrashim about this, but maybe you can guess which one I'm thinking. Yeah. Which one, what does the esrog represent? A certain segment of Klal Yisrael. Which segment of Klal Yisrael? The ones that have both smell and taste. The tzaddikim! The tzaddikim have smell and taste, they don't shower. No! The tzaddikim have a good smell, they have a good taste, they have Torah and Maisim Tovim. So not only do they have a beautiful taste, but there's a smell as well, it reaches out, there's Maisim Tovim, it gets expressed outwardly, not just something that's internal, but the tzaddikim of Klal Yisrael have a beauty within them that's expressed outwardly for Klal Yisrael. And then you have what else?
Taste is not outward.
What? No, taste is inside, but the smell is outward.
The
Hadassim have
just smell,
but no taste, which represents those people in Klal Yisrael that have the external, but not the internal. So they reach out, they help people, and they do nice things, but there's no Torah there. There's not really. And the lulav, the heart of the palm tree, is a fruit, is edible, but it doesn't have a fragrance because there's Torah there. But these are the people that learn, but they don't really have Maisim Tovim, not really helping other people, there's no external signs of it really. And then there are the Aravis. You have no taste, you have no smell. And as Arvelovsky likes to say, so on Sukkot we bring them in. If you remember, Rosh Hashanah, what do we say? Anim Kippur. Anim Kippur, what do we say? Anu matirim lehispalel im ha'avaryonim. We give permission for all of the avaryonim, all of the Rishoyim, all the people with Averis, we give them permission, we're all in this together, we're all one big Klal Yisrael, we take all four species, the great Tzaddikim, internal, external, those members of Klal Yisrael have only one component out of the two, and even the ones that have neither one, they're all one Aguda, Aguda Achas, all one big Klal Yisrael. Until Hoshana Rabbah, and we take the Rishoyim, and we beat them, and we beat them, and we beat them! No? Does nothing work? Anyway. But it represents all the different people in Klal Yisrael, and we put them all together. Anybody here ever grown aravis? Yeah. They're easy to grow. It's fascinating. They're easy to grow all over the place. You take your leftover aravis, you stick them in the ground, more often than not, they'll start growing. I can't guarantee you're going to get good ones the next year. It's hard to really cultivate them, that you get good ones every year. A guy, Moshul, actually is a rubber farmer. You can come meet him when you come to Pomona. But it's challenging to really cultivate, but they grow. They for sure grow. They're pretty, actually, how about Hadassim? Anybody ever plant Hadassim?
My dad planted one.
Yeah.
About 20 years later.
20 years later, not bad. Not bad. They're challenging. They're extremely challenging to grow. What about lulav? Anybody here ever plant any palm trees in New York? You'll notice they don't really grow. They don't grow in New York. And what about an esrog tree? Well, at least in Florida, you got palm trees. You ever seen an esrog tree in Florida?
You can grow an esrog tree, but it hasn't really grown. That tree is more like a small little plant.
Yeah.
It's been growing for years. It
doesn't do well. So think this through for a minute. Which one is the hardest to grow? The esrog. Which one's the easiest? The aravis. Both of them, by the way, as our Gemara is hinting to you right now, survive from water. Because the pre-ates hadur means water in Greek. But arve nachal are the aravis, the rishoyim. And that's also referred to as growing along the nachal, along the water. So those rishoyim, do you need like a place? They'll grow anywhere. It doesn't make a difference if the climate is the United States of America, or the climate is the opposite, it's Eretz Yisrael. The aravis grow anywhere. But the really the greatest of the tzaddikim are the hardest to cultivate. Because unless you have the right context, you have the right chevra, you have the right surroundings, you connect yourself to the right water, you connect yourself to the right people, so it just doesn't work. You could be a Rasha anywhere. To be a tzaddik, you have to make sure to find the right context and put yourself into the right place. Anyway, so the Gemara says, Shel Asheira, v'shil nidachas pasol. If you have an esrog that is from an Asherah tree or from an Ir HaNidachas, it is pasul. My taima. What's the reason? So we know this already. Kivan al-Sreifa Koi, Kisuzi Miklas Shi'ureib, since it's destined to be burnt, Allah is, it has to be burnt. It does not consider ground up from having a Shi'ur, from having dimensions. And even though the Esrog's dimensions are different than the other things, do you remember? What are the dimensions of Hadassim and Arabis? What are the dimensions of Hadassim and Arabis?
They have to be smooth edges? Or?
Dimensions. How big they have to be?
Three.
Ding, ding, ding. Three tvachim. And the lulav is supposed to be?
6 or 5.
1 more, 4. Okay, so we got 3 and 4. And if you remember, we had the very complicated dimensions on the board. But in any case, that's the bottom line. Is that we're talking 3 and 4 tvachim. How about the esrog? How many tvachim? Totally different dimensions, right? It has to be either like a walnut or like an egg. But so in other words, it has dimensions though. Its dimensions have to do not with tefachim, rather with whether it's like a walnut, like an egg, whatever. But it does have dimensions. So because of that, the Gemara says here also, it's a good question, what's the problem with an esrog shel asheira? But at the end of the day, because an esrog does have dimensions, and this thing doesn't have any dimensions because it has to be destroyed, so it's not a valid esrog. The Mishnah also told us that it says, Shel Orla, it's pasul. What's Orla again? The first 3 years of a fruit tree since it's been planted. What if you replant it? Does it start over? You have a pear tree in your villa in Boca. And you want to move somewhere. But you don't want to leave your pear tree. You want to take it with you. So you uproot it from the ground and you take it with you to your new house.
No Orla?
So the answer is, it depends. If it's considered still in the ground when you replant it, then it doesn't restart. How in the world would it still be in the ground? So it's interesting. If you ever seen trees or plants growing and they sell them at the store, how do they? What do they do? You know? You ever buy one? What does it look like when you buy it? It's just a bunch of roots sticking out of the bottom? It's in a pot or it's wrapped in something so that is a huge clump of dirt surrounding the roots. By the way, those of you, you got to remember this. You know, when your kid comes back from nursery and he's got his like lima bean plant, you know, exposed roots kill the plant. So if you don't have it surrounded by dirt, you just have like exposed roots. It's not looking good. It's not looking good. But if he comes home with a clump of dirt around the roots, so then they have a good chance to replant it because it's still considered, it's still in the ground. So same thing here. If you have some kind of tree that has a huge clump of dirt still surrounding its roots, so that is considered still in the ground, even though it's removed from the rest of the dirt, but the dirt that it grew in is still there. So when you quote-unquote replant it, Orla does not start over. But if you really did not have significant dirt around the roots, you're just replanting it, so then actually Orla does start again. In any case, but an esrog shel orla is pasul. My taima. Why? Who cares if you're not allowed to eat your esrog? Last time I checked, you're supposed to shake it, not eat it anyway.
Some people can eat it.
Not when they're shaking it. Right now they're shaking it. So what's the problem? Havamina? Anybody have a thought? Like, why should it be a problem? Oh, okay. Anyway, so Nora says, my taima. What's the reason? What's wrong with it? What's the problem? Pligi bar Rechiya Oven, Rabbi Asi. This was a machlokes between Rechiya bar Oven and Rabbi Asi. We don't know who said what, at least not yet. The Gemara says, Chad Omar, one of them said, Levish ain't baheter achila. Because not allowed to eat it. We don't know why that's a problem. Like, what's, so what? But you're not supposed to eat Esther on Sukkot anyway. So why is it a problem if you can't eat it? The Chad Omar, Levish ain't but din mamin. Another one said because it doesn't have a halacha, a status of being property, having financial value. What's the difference? Like, what's going on here? So, anyone want to take a stab at this? Okay, so we'll let Rashi do it. Rashi says, "Lefish ein ba heter achila." It doesn't have. You're not allowed to eat it. Rachmana Amar, a merciful one said, "Lochem." Lokachtem what? Lochem. Biyom Arishon. So what? Lochem haro'i lochem mechol darkei hana'asai. It has to be yours. Right, so let's take a step back for a minute. Are you allowed to use somebody else's lulav or Esther, Gadas, and Rabbis on the first day of Sukkot?
No.
Why not? Because the pasuk says, "Vilkachem lochem," that what you shake on the first day has to be yours. Is that a halacha in property or edibility?
Property.
We all would have said property, right? It has to be yours. You have to own it. So if you own it, you own it. What if you do own it, but you can't eat it? What if you own it, but you can't eat it? Have you ever owned a pig?
No.
Oh, me either. But if you did, would you be allowed to eat it?
No.
No. But it's yours. So could there be an esrig that's aser ba'achila, but you still own it?
Yeah.
Oh. So is that lochem or it's not? So we all probably would have said, yeah, that's called lochem. It's yours. Wait a minute. It's mine. I can't eat it, but it's mine. It's not really totally mine. I can't eat it. But this is a fruit. You can't eat sticks. But this is a fruit that you should be able to eat. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, sorry, you can't. It's orla. Sorry, you can't eat it. So, interesting. So now the Gemara basically wants to know, how much does it have to be yours? Does it have to be yours just financially? Or does it have to be yours, meaning you can do whatever you want with it? So the opinion that holds that it has to be edible means it has to be yours so much, you can basically do whatever you want with it, free will. It has to be totally yours. You can do whatever you want with it. And the other opinion apparently holds, no, financially it has to be yours. But, you know, it's yours even if you can't necessarily eat it. It's still yours. You own it. Okay, so the one says, Kasal kadaite, it arises into our mind, his mind, mandibai heter achila, the one that requires allowance to be eaten, Loboy din mamin, doesn't require it to be yours, which is a little funny. In other words, you could eat something that's not yours, like when you go to someone else's house. So is it that you have to be able to eat it, or it has to be yours so much that you could even eat it, which is basically what I was just explaining. So the Gemara says, no, Berman's on the wrong track. They're arguing. So one holds, it has to be yours. It doesn't have to be yours financially. It has to be yours that you can do whatever you want with it. I mean, you can like eat it. You can even consume it. But ownership? That's not what we're talking about. And the other opinion is, and the one that requires the din of money, meaning that it's yours, technically you own it, so he says, but you don't have to be able to eat it. So that's the Gemara's assumption. Isn't it true that we're talking about opposite approaches? One approach is that you have to be able to eat it, but you don't have to own it. And the other approach is, no, you have to own it, but you don't necessarily have to be able to eat it. Isn't that the machlokas? Gemara says, no. Tanan, we learn in the Mishnah. Shall truma temeya our Mishnah. If the esrig is truma temeya, now let's just chazer this for a second. All of you kohanim out there, raise your hand if you're a kohen. No one. So that's why you don't know this. That's how I teach you. Truma. What's the coin supposed to do with it?
Eat it.
What happens if it becomes tummy? What's the coin supposed to do with it?
Not eat it.
Ooh, can't eat it. Not allowed to eat it if it is tummy. So do you have to throw it in garbage? Like
no,
what?
You burn.
Can you like warm yourself up when you burn it? Can you cook when you burn it?
No, Ben.
Is it asr be hana'a?
Yeah.
Or you just have to destroy it?
Asr
be hana'a. They also say asr be hana'a. All right, so we'll have to see. The Mishnah said, if you have an esrig that is truma, what kind?
Temeya,
then the esrig is pasul. Okay, interesting. Wait, why? Why? Bishlam of the mandamur. It's good, I'm at peace with the man that holds. Because the problem is an esrig has to be edible. Listen, you don't have to own it, but it has to at least be edible. So Shapir, I understand, because Truma Tmei is not edible. So I understand why it's possible. Elaman Dhamma Lefishain Badin Moment. But according to the person who holds that it just has to be yours financially, you don't have to be able to eat it. You have to be able to own it. Oh my, what's the problem with Truma Tmei? Hare Mesika Tachas Tav Shiloi. Behold, you can burn it under your cooking. Your cooked dish. Right? So it's not Asar Behano. Truma Temeya has to be destroyed. But, technically, you'd even be allowed to burn it under your whatever you want to use it as firewood.
Is the coin gain hana, or are you gain hana from burning?
The going. The Kohen's going to burn it, but the way that he's going to destroy it is by using it for firewood.
But let's say it became contaminated before you gave it to him.
Yeah, that could be the case.
And then would you be able to get halal from it?
Yeah, but you may have to...
At that point, aren't you dedicating it to him, basically? As you're saying,
it has to be given to him. That's the problem. The Kohen has to be given the truma.
Right, no, but what I'm saying is, like, technically, if it's truma that's tame, it's his truma still. And the problem is he just can't eat it. But he could still benefit from it, which makes sense, because it's his, and it's his portion.
Right.
But, like, if you designate the portion, and you said, like, this is your truma, and then it became tame, but you didn't actually give it to him yet, you burn it yourself, and then you're paying.
You'd be stealing from the kohen if you burn it before you give it to him. You're not allowed. It's his.
Right. So you still have to give it to him, and he has to
burn. Correct. Do you know the biblical zoo in Bayi Vegan?
Mm-hmm.
See, do you know that this is a Maisa Shahaya? Do you know that they at one point decided they were going to sell the animals to a kohen? And they were going to feed the animals, I think, the Truma Tumeya or something like that? Because all you assume everything's Tame. And all the farms all have a ton of Truma they have to separate. It's all Tame Truma. You can't do anything with it. So instead of letting it all rot, feed it to the kohen's animals. Until they found the workers were munching on the... and that's like a chiv misi v'dei shamayim. No, it's not bad at all.
I thought you just said it's truma tameh.
It's tameh, but it doesn't make it bad.
Oh, I thought you said it was rotting.
No, it's not to be rotting.
They sold it to the kohen?
No, it was just truma.
They sold the animals in the zoo to a kohen. And then they were his animals now. So he can feed his animals the truma tameh.
Because he's been...
Yeah.
He's getting
phenomenal. But then they found the workers were eating some of it too. So then I think they...
But maybe this one... Maybe you can say this one halal and then...
Anyway, that's what I heard. You can try to figure out if that's a true story, but that's what I heard. Anyway, so...
Wait, I have a question. But theoretically, if a kohen had a slave though, right? And then like you'd be able to give truma tameh to a slave...
I don't think so. I think the Gemara has this case, what's called Karshine Truma. That's why I think the whole thing's a little sketchy. That there are certain types of very low-grade foods that are like animal food. But people food, I don't think you are allowed, even if you feed the Truma Tumeya to the animals. So they are the Karshine Truma. So I don't know exactly how this works, but that's what I heard. Anyway, so the Gemara says that what's the story with an Esrig that's Truma Tumeya? The Mishnah told us it's no good, but why? So if the whole problem is it has to be edible, okay, this isn't edible, so I understand the psul. But if the problem is it has to be yours in terms of ownership, well, it is. The kohen owns the Truma Tumeya, what's the problem? So why should an esrig that's Truma Tumeya be pasul for esrig? What's the problem? So you have to say, everyone agrees, that lachem means you have to be able to eat it. Ki pligi b'din mamin. They argue over the ownership. One holds you just have to be able to eat it, but you don't have to be able to own it. And the other opinion is, you also have to own it. Which is interesting. So now the machlokas becomes, everyone agrees, the baseline is, you have to be able at least to eat it. I would have said the exact opposite. I thought, and then everyone agrees, you have to own it. The only question is, well, you can own it without being able to eat it. The Gemara takes the exact opposite approach. Everyone agrees you have to be able to eat it. So if you can't eat it, then it's no good. And that's the case of Truma Tumeya. The Machlokes is, well, what if, you know, do you have to also own it? Or it's not necessary at all. You have to be able to own it or it's not necessary at all. So the Gemara says, wait a minute. At the end of the day, Ma'ay Beinayu, what's between them? What's the nafkamina? What's the difference? At the end of the day, if you can eat it, but you don't own it, so then you can't be yotze with it. Well, we know lachem already. We know that if you don't own it, if it's somebody else's, we know you can't be yotze with that. That's what Pashut Pshat, just what lachem means. What in the world is being added here? You have to be able to eat it, but there's a machlokes if you have to be able to own it. What is being added to the regular din that everybody knew at the beginning of today? That the arba minim have to be yours. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you the difference between this. Iko beinayu, there is between them. The difference is, Meiser sheni birushalayim, aliba de Rebbe Meir. Are you ready for this? Meiser Sheni in Yerushalayim, according to Rebbe Meir. Sounds like a game of Clue. What are we talking about? Meiser Sheni, if you remember, you have to separate Truma to the Kohen. Meiser Rishon goes to the Levi. And then on year 1 and 2 and 4 and 5, you separate Meiser Sheni a second time. Then what do you do with it? Bring it to Yerushalayim and you eat it. Meiser Ani is in the 3rd and 6th year. You give it to the poor. But Meiser Sheni is 1, 2, 4, 5. That's when you separate it and you bring it to Yerushalayim and you eat it. If it's not going to make it to Yerushalayim, it's going to spoil. What do? You exchange it onto money. And you buy stuff there. And then all the fruit becomes totally, you can eat it in outside of Yerushalayim. Once you're paid it, once you redeem it onto coins. So, okay, so what's the story? The story is, you have Meiser Sheni. It's not going to spoil. You bring it to Yerushalayim. Are you allowed to eat it? Yes, you're allowed to eat it, right? Because you're supposed to. You're supposed to eat it in Yerushalayim. Great. Do you own it?
Yes.
No. Yes. Ha ha! Rebbe Meir, that's the trick. What's the trick? Because Rebbe Meir held that Meiser Sheni is not technically yours. In other words, ask it just as a question in the abstract. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you, separate Meiser Sheni and then eat it in Yerushalayim. Is it because this is obviously your crops and I just want you to come visit, so I made a halacha, you have to eat it in Yerushalayim? Or is it that this is not yours? Basically, when you separate it and designate it as Meiser Sheni, it's almost like a carbon. It's like you're giving it to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, ahem, come here, that's mine. You want to come to my house? You can eat it. You're not in my house? You're not allowed. It's my stuff. You bring it to me. So how do you view Meiser Sheni? Is Meiser Sheni Maman Gavoya? It belongs, so to speak, to Kadosh Baruch Hu? Or Meiser Sheni is yours? It's just you have to eat it in Yerushalayim. How do you view it? So Rabbi Meir held, it's not yours. Meiser Sheni is a Kadosh Baruch Hu's. When you separate it, you are designating it to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, I'll let you eat it as long as you come to my house. That's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. So, are you allowed to eat it in Yerushalayim? Yes. Is it yours? According to Rabbi Meir, no. Ah. So now we have a case of something that you're allowed to eat, but it's not yours. Which is interesting. If the only problem of the Esrig is that you have to be able to eat it, well, can you? In Yerushalayim. Yes. So no problem. Is it yours?
No.
No. Do we care? Well, that opinion says, I don't care. You just have to be able to eat it. Harish b'etar achila. Behold, there is an allowance to eat it. Laman da rafish ein bo din mamin. But according to the opinion it holds, you have to be able to own it. Meiser Sheni mamin gavoya, who, according to Rabbi Meir, Meiser Sheni is money that belongs on, that is exalted money. Exalted money. It's mamin gavoya. That means it's money that belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu, who it is. Okay, but this was a machlokes. We don't know exactly who said what. So the Gemara just wants to fill in the blank now. Who said which opinion? Who said that all you have to do is be able to eat it? And who said you also have to be able to own it? Tis time to re-assi the Amar Lafish Ein Badin Mamin. Let us conclude that it's Rabbi Asi that said because it doesn't have a halacha of money. You don't own it. So how do you know that he's the one that said that? Don't Rabbi Asi. Rabbi Asi said, Esrik Shel Meiser Sheni. If you have an Esrik that's Meiser Sheni, Ledivrei Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir, who holds it doesn't belong to you. A person cannot fulfill his obligation with it on Yamtiv. According to the Chachamim, hold it's yours. Meiser Sheni is yours. You just have to eat it. Yerushalayim. Then one can fulfill his obligation with that Esrik on Yamtiv. Okay, let's conclude that it is Rabbi who? Asi, that holds that you also have to be able to own it. Gufa, back to the main topic, back to the body of the matter. Amr Biasi, Esrik Shel Meiser Sheni Lediv Rabbi Meir, Ein Adam Yotzei B'Dechavasa B'Yamtiv. We just finished saying that according to Rabbi Meir, if you have an Esrik of Meiser Sheni, even though it's in Yerushalayim, you still cannot be Yotzei with it because it's not technically yours in terms of property. But Lediv Chachamim, according to the rest of the Chachamim, Adam Yotzei B'Dechavasa B'Yamtiv. Person can fulfill his obligation with it because it is considered to be his. Okay. Matzah Shel Meiser Sheni Ledivrei Rabbi Meir. We're going to change the topic now. Till now we're talking about Esrig on Sukkos. What about matzah? What are you supposed to do with matzah again?
Eat it.
Eat it. Okay. So if you have Meiser Sheni matzah, you should be able to eat it where?
Yerushalayim.
Yerushalayim. Well, what could possibly be the problem? Is there some halach of lachem by matzah? Have you ever eaten someone else's matzah in Pesach and not been yotze? You don't have to own the matzah. Whoever has their own matzah on Pesach. So, it says here, matzah from my Yisheshenet de Rabbi Meir, ein adam yotze by the chavasim of Pesach. You can't be yotze with Meiser Sheni matzah. What? Why? According to the Chachamim, though, one can fulfill his obligation with Meiser Sheni matzah. So that's A. Matzah. That's Meiser Sheni. B. Isa. What's an Isa? Dough. A dough of Meiser Sheni. What is dough? Who cares about dough? So dough, you have to be separate what from it? What we call challah. What we call challah is like, you know, like a ready baked loaf. But technically, challah means the amount you have to separate from your dough and give it to the kohen as dough.
That's true.
You can separate them, bake it, whatever other things you can do. That's called challah. It's a type of truma. But it's called challah. Isa shel Meiser Sheni. So you have Meiser Sheni, and it, instead of stalks, it's been turned into a dough. Okay. According to Rabbi Meir, you do not have to separate challah from it. You want to take a guess why? Why would you not have to separate Meiser Sheni from challah? Sorry, not from challah, from dough. Why would you not have to separate Meiser Sheni from dough? The last Rashi on the page, the mitzvah is to separate challah from dough that's yours. Reishis Ariso Seichem. There you have a halach of lachem. So if you're the one that owns the dough, if it's your dough, you own the bakery. I remember when the pizza shop used to be called Time Out. And so there was this fellow named Shalom. And he used to go into the back and he would come out with his dough every once in a while. And he would get everybody's attention with his big ball of dough. And would say, Baruch Adah Hashem, and I got a mechala v'asher, kide shalom, it's what I'm tzivan, or afish chala, mina isa. And everyone would say, Amen. He would toss it into the oven and burn the chala because there's no coin to give the tamei challah too. Okay, so we burn the challah. Rabbi Meir holds what Meiser Sheni belongs to who?
Not you.
Not you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So do you have a mitzvah to be mafresh challah from Meiser Sheni dough? No, because it's not yours.
Wait, this isn't the case where the challah is not yours? Wait, not the challah, sorry.
The dough is Meiser Sheni. It's yours, right? You farmed, you cut the wheat, you made it into a dough. It's all yours, right? Not so fast, because it's Meiser Sheni.
All of the dough is Meiser Sheni?
This particular dough. This dough that you made, this batter that you made, came from stalks of wheat that were Meiser Sheni.
Oh, okay.
So you have to eat it in Yerushalayim. You could eat it in Yerushalayim, but Rimeir holds it's not yours, even in Yerushalayim. It's considered to be Mamun Gavoya. In which case, are you obligated to separate challah from it, give it to the kohen? No. Because the mitzvah of challah is only reishis ariso seichem. It's only from your dough, and this one does not belong to you. But ledivrei chachamim, but the chachamim hold meiser sheni dough is yours, so then chayeves b'challah. It's obligated in challah. Okay, so we have three things that are in the same general category. What are they? Esrog, matzah, and challah. Esrog, matzah, and challah. Esrog, matzah, and challah, what do they seem to have in common? They all have to be yours, it would seem. So according to Rabbi Meir, esrog, matzah, and challah, that are Meiser Sheni, are all not yours. So an esrog that's not yours, can you be yotze with it on Sukkos? No. What about matzah that's not yours? Apparently, you can't be yotze with that either, I guess. We'll have to figure that out. I think we'll address that in a second. And number three, dough that's not yours. There's no chiyuv to do what? Separate, what do you call it? Challah. There's no mitzvah to separate challah because only from, that's a pasuk, reishis ariso seichem. So esrog and challah we're okay with because we have a pasuk for both. Vilkachtem lachem biyom harishon, has to be yours. And reishis ariso say chem, that the dough has to be yours. What's the only one that we don't have a pasuk for? We don't understand why in the world does matzah have to be yours? Maskifel of Papa. Rav Papa asked an attack question. Bishlama Isa. I understand the dough. Ksiv, Reishis, Ariso, Seichem. Because the pasuk says it has to be your dough, the first of your dough. Esrig nami, ksiv lochem, misha lochem. Esrig also, the pasuk says, lochachtem lochem, has to be from yours. Ela matzah, miksiv matzaschem. Where does it ever say in the Torah that it has to be your matzah in order to fulfill the obligation of eating matzah? Leil Seder. Omer Rabba bar Shmuel v'itamer Rav Yemar bar Shalmei. Asya lechem, lechem. It's a gzera shava. Oh, a gzera shava. Lechem, lechem. You know, this is where Little Caesars got it from. Pizza, pizza. Lechem, lechem. Ksiv hacha, lechem oini. Matzah is referred to as lechem oini. I'm not going to translate that because there are too many translations. Poor man's bread, bread of suffering, bread that you answer questions on, right? Lechem oini has a lot of different meanings. That's a great drasha for the Haggadah. We'll get to that another time. Uksiv hasam. And it says elsewhere, v'hayah ba'ach lechem milechem ha'aretz. And when you get to Eretz Yisrael, and you don't have man anymore, and you're going to be eating from the lechem of the land. Yeah, so what? Rashi writes, v'hayah ba'ach lechem kabe chalaksiv. That word lechem appears by challah. Even though the word that we always focus on for challah is ariso seichem, your dough. But nonetheless, the word lechem appears by that also when the mitzvah was given. So Moshe Rabbeinu informs us from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that when you get to Eretz Yisrael, you don't have man anymore, you're going to harvest grain, you're going to make dough, and you're going to have to give challah from it. When you don't have man anymore and you'll be eating from the lechem of Eretz Yisrael, so you have to separate challah. Ma'ala halon mishal lechem. Just like by challah, by the dough, we know the dough has to be yours. V'lo mishal ma'iser, and therefore it can't be from ma'iser sheni. Afkan mishal lechem v'lo mishal ma'iser. So too, we learn by matzah that it has to be yours and not from ma'iser sheni. So, the Gemara is limiting this, right? Is it that the matzah has to be yours? What would Rabbi Meir say? We pass like Chachamim, right? What would Rabbi Meir say? You go to Seder at someone else's house. Are they giving you the matzah? Yeah. So that's one possibility. Rabbi Meir says, okay, Nachanam, you got to make sure the matzah is yours. You have to be koine the matzah. Maybe if it's in your mouth, we consider you be koine. I don't know. You know, you want a great shaila? So, you go to someone's house and you have one of those twist caps on the bottle and you win something. So, do you get to keep it? What if it's a little bottle and they give each person at the table a bottle?
That's how friendships are broken.
That's how families are broken. No, but so at what point does it ever become yours? Like, if you know... Anyway, it's interesting. What, fortune cookie? I don't know. Like, you know, when does something become yours? When you put food down on somebody's plate, is it now like it's his food or it's mine? I'm just letting you eat it. So would that ever happen afkamina? So maybe here would be exactly the question. But in any case, the Gemara focuses on the Ma'aser Sheni, but how far would Rabbi Meir take it? Does Rabbi Meir really think that matzah has to be totally 100% yours? That's what it would sound like, no? In any case, just like when it comes to challah, it says mishal lechem, and not ma'aser sheni, afkan, so too by matzah, because of what? The gzeira shava, lechem lechem, mishal lechem, eloshal ma'aser. So just finishing it up, the Gemara says, lema misayayale. Let's say that the following supports this. Isa, shal ma'aser sheni, a dough that's ma'aser sheni, petura mina challah diber Rabbi Meir. It's exempt from challah, says Rabbi Meir. Okay. Again, they're arguing over Ma'aser Sheni. Is Ma'aser Sheni yours? Is Ma'aser Sheni? Maman Gavoya belongs to Hashem. So Gemara says, what did you just quote this for? You said that supports. What does it support? Lema misayayale. He. That's the same halacha we just talked about. That's exactly what we're saying. Rabbi Meir holds that Ma'aser Sheni is not yours, and therefore it has three nafkaminas and three areas of Torah. Esrei, matzah, and isa, and challah. Well, what are you adding? What do you mean, lema misayayah, this is a support? That's the same din. Ela mideh behop pligi. Rather, what we meant to say is that from the fact that they argue over the dough and challah, b'ha nami pligi, in this also they argue, odil mashani isa damarkra ariso seichem ariso seichem tre zimne. Or maybe there's a difference between matzah and isa, because even though there is a connection, but by challah it actually says the word ariso seichem twice. So maybe since it says it twice, it has to be more yours by challah than it does in other areas like matzah or whatever, and so maybe we should talk and make a distinction. So this is a support that you see that what? Where's the support? So Rashi writes, Odil Mashani Isa, or maybe dough is different, but Hohu Deka Amar Rabbi Meir. Maybe Rabbi Meir limits himself to dough. Dechsiv mi'uta yaseira, because it says yours twice. Ariso seichem, ariso seichem. Aba b'chad mi'uta l'nafkalon. If it only said it once, we wouldn't necessarily apply it out of there. Dekevan, d'mishtari l'achila, fagav, d'lisba, din mamin, lachem, karina bay. So maybe it would be considered yours because it's mutter ba'achila. So in other words, the Gemara's bottom line, what is it going to want from this last section? The Gemara is saying, how do you know that Rabbi Meir would say that you're not chayav to be mafresh chala from a dough that's ma'aser sheni? What do you mean? I thought this was like his whole theory that it doesn't belong to you. Well, but maybe when it comes to ariso seichem, because there's a double focus, it says it twice. That's why. But had it only said it once, so then maybe, I don't know, maybe it just has to be yours in terms of eating. Maybe not in terms of total ownership, in terms of property. Maybe Ma'aser Sheni or Rabbi Meir would agree. Ma'aser Sheni, okay, then you just have to be able to eat it. So Kamash Malan, Rabbi Meir actually says it explicitly, that when it comes to challah, you do not have to be mafresh from dough that's Ma'aser Sheni. That just kind of spells it out in no uncertain terms. Okay, it was a long one, but we did it. Okay.